Hello, I'm Kimberly Dondo, Digital Content Manager, and welcome to In Conversation With, the podcast series that delves into the world of financial services and brings you face-to-face with some of the most notable figures in the industry. Listen as we discuss topics that are currently facing the industry and hear from visionary CEOs to disruptive innovators as we bring you a diverse array of voices and perspectives. We'll explore the challenges they faced, the lessons they've learned, and the insights they have to share about the ever-evolving landscape of financial services.
Hi, I'm Lois Vallely, Chief Reporter for Money Marketing, and today I'm joined by Cathy Harrison, who is Chief Executive of the Verve Group. Thank you so much for joining me, Cathy. It's great to have you on our podcast.
No worries. Thanks for inviting me along.
So I'm sure many listeners will know who you are and what Verve does, but just for the benefit of those who might not, maybe you could start off by introducing yourself and telling us a bit about how you got to where you are today.
Absolutely, yes. So my background, I've always been in finance, and almost 15 years ago now, which is crazy, I went freelance as a paraplanner and started what became Parasols, which was an outsourced paraplanning company, which I think a lot of advisors have heard of, hopefully. And then kind of over the years, ended up building additional businesses, all with the same aim of supporting advice firms. So obviously Parasols was focused on paraplanning. We did our launched company focused on compliance, which was Apricity. Then one on training. So just finding that gap in how, you know, as an advisor, do you find and train paraplanners, as an example, if you don't want to outsource? So that was the art of finance. And initially, Verve was just a brand to kind of pull all those businesses together so that advisors knew it was the same sort of team and philosophy behind them. What we then did in 2022 up until, through 22 to mid 23 was just restructure and bring the whole lot together. So the Verve Group now is all of those services, but from a single business. So admin, paraplanning, compliance, training, we help firms with marketing, business proposition. It's an awful term, but it's basically a one-stop shop, I guess, for advisors to get the support that they need in their business to help them do the stuff that they want to do and they enjoy doing, which is typically going out and seeing their clients.
Yeah, no, sounds interesting. So I was talking to Hayley Rebetz the other day about the incubator, and I think, is it, which cohort's going through now?
Fifth now. So that's on the, so just in addition to all of that, because I wasn't busy enough, we launched a separate business to the Verve Group, which is the Verve Foundation. So that's the not-for-profit business. It's funded through sponsorship from companies within financial services who are all keen to address some of the challenges in the industry. So it came from this kind of frustration of, we're all, you know, for the 18, 19 years I've been in finance, we've talked about how not enough people come into finance, or how there's not a good enough range of diversity of all different types in finance, or how hard it can be to get up and running in your own business. And it just felt like a lot of the same conversations happening, but nothing really being done to change it. So, you know, firms might launch a training program to bring people into their own company, just as we have on the Verve Group, and that actually doesn't help the industry more broadly. So the foundation is a separate thing. That's what it does. So it's kind of, it's very separate to Verve Group. And it's just, how do we bring new people in, which we do through our We Are Change program, find new people, bring them into finance, get them underway with qualifications, try and help them find a job. And then also the incubator, as you mentioned, is just new advisors that are newly looking to go on their own. How do you support them? How do you help answer their business challenges? They've got additional challenges to a normal new business with like regulatory questions and client proposition and all of this. We kind of have a couple of initiatives running through that, which is just lovely to feel that you're actually, you know, you're over here running a business, but you're over here actually starting to hopefully have some of the impact that you really have always wanted to do.
Yeah, definitely. You've obviously already touched on a couple of challenges for advisors there, but what do you think are some of the biggest challenges for advisors today?
It's quite a long list. There is quite a long list, and I think that's telling in itself, because it is a very challenging industry to be in and hasn't moved on as much as I think a lot of people would have liked it to have, especially, like I said, I've been in it nearly 20 years and a lot of those challenges haven't changed. I think there is just so much legacy in everything, whether in the tech or in the product or in the perception of advice or in the type of people that it's attracted to choose it as a career. Like, there's all of that legacy, and that doesn't change overnight, and it doesn't change just through people wishing it would. And then there's also to move from that legacy stuff, there's just a very slow pace of change in finance, in part because of the regulation. I think that worry that they might accidentally step outside of the regulatory requirements really hinders innovation and really hinders change. So the challenges, I feel like, haven't changed a lot. So yeah, it is that. It is the lack of people. It's always been the lack of people choosing it as a career. We know that there's a massive advice gap, and if there's fewer people giving advice, that's going to keep happening. I think a lot of advice businesses are still, through no fault of their own, very inefficient in the way that they run. Because again, you've got a challenge of running a business, and then you've got an extra challenge of running a regulatory business, and you're trying to do the two at once. And I think between tech not being where people want it to be, new people not coming in, and, you know, having this kind of talent pool to come in and really help shape things up, I think for a lot of firms, it can just feel like a bit of a slog. I made it sound really negative. It's not.
Well, what are some of the things that financial advisors should be really excited about for today?
From all the doom and gloom, I think the fact with finance is, despite all of that, the people who have chosen financial advice and financial planning as a career absolutely love it still. I think I genuinely believe in the power of giving really good financial planning, financial advice to clients. I think as an industry, we can and we do an awful lot of good. And yes, there's maybe frustration about the back office side of things and how things work and how you wish it could be better. But actually, that's not the main point of it. The main point is it's the client piece. And we know that there's, you know, it's actually what an unusual world to operate in, where there's almost an endless, abundant amount of potential clients for you. Like, as a business owner, if I went and started a business selling water bottles, because there's one on my desk, how am I going to stand out? How am I going to find clients that will want my water bottles? Like, you know, it's much more competitive. In finance, there's so many people that want what you're offering, and you're doing a good thing. You're genuinely helping them and impacting their lives. So I think that piece and that purpose, that mission that happens to a lot of advisors is absolutely there. Just think there's a long way for us to go to get that kind of the back office and stuff that underpins it working a lot better.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think you mentioned that tech is very slow to advance in finance. Do you see that changing, or is that, you know, is it always going to be sort of behind maybe other sectors?
Both. I think it'll always be behind other sectors for two reasons. Again, legacy. So, you know, we can't just come in and go, here's one shiny new piece of tech that's going to do everything, because it doesn't work. There's existing clients and plans and, you know, all commission structures and all of that stuff. They're not going away. So you know, you kind of can't. And then again, the regulatory pressure. And I actually don't think the regulatory pressure is as bad as maybe some people or advisors worry that it is. I think it's absolutely something that can be navigated, but I do think it naturally hinders it. That said, it feels like there's a lot of activity in the tech zone. So actually, I think it'll get better relative to where we've been. Not necessarily that we're ever going to be, you know, the sector that people look to be the most advanced in terms of technology. But I think one of the other challenges I'm seeing in the tech space, and actually not even, you know, not just advisor tech, like maybe platform tech or even client proposition, is there's so many potential directions for financial services to go in now. And lots of people have lots of different views of that direction. And so they're building their tech or their business or their proposition based on what their view is. And I think that in itself is maybe slowing the process. If we thought we're at A and we all believe we're going to end up at B, I think the industry would get there much faster. But if we're at A and nobody knows if we're going to end up in B, C, D, E, F, or Z, there's kind of a slower pace of change to get there. So yeah, there just seems to be an awful lot of diverging opinions, which, you know, because nobody's got a crystal ball, and we're in quite a unique position, I think, with kind of all the change that has been happening.
Yeah, definitely. What are your thoughts on AI then? And whether that's going to make a big difference in finance?
Do you know what? I wasn't that bothered about it. Because I'm really old and I just think, I don't like the robots. And bits and pieces that I've seen, I wasn't overwhelmed with. So we've been working on some AI on a very specific project within Verve and within one of our services, which hopefully will come out by the end of Q1, early Q2. And so for the first time I kind of saw, oh, hang on a minute, that could make something that we do take 10% of the amount of time that it takes currently. And if we can do that, then the cost for us to deliver it should come down. And then if we could do that across all of our services and the cost to deliver them all come down, and we can support advisors at an even lower cost than we are, like, can they bring their costs down? And, you know, this whole pressure that we've got on, like, this advice chain and how you get more clients accessing advice, make it more affordable in whatever way. I actually think AI has a place to help do that and start going, okay, how do we as a service, a business, an entire industry get more and more and more efficient so that we can kind of see more clients? And then the bit where I got a bit excited is because we've been using Copilot and just kind of trialing it, and oh, it's really good.
I haven't tried it yet.
So one of the guys in the office just put into Teams, put into Copilot, tell me everything I've missed, or summarize what I've missed in Teams in the last 30 days. And it was a handful of bullet points. It was absolutely spot on in terms of it understood the importance of the conversation. There's a lot of nonsense chattered in our Teams group, a lot of GIFs and memes and irrelevant stuff. It skipped all of that. It knew the main bits. It sort of highlighted and tagged people. And it was just even well written. The grammar was good on it. I just thought, oh, no, I can kind of start to see it. So I absolutely think it will. But again, you just have to be careful. I think if it's almost like trying to run before you can walk. If you're doing something in an advice firm or a part of the advice chain, and your existing tech or your existing data or whatever isn't working that well, you can't fix it with AI. You kind of need to get your basics right and then kind of level it up a bit.
Yeah, no, definitely, totally agree. There's also this, because there's quite a lot of talk at the moment about how AI could maybe make the advice process more efficient for advisors, and therefore, as you've mentioned, then they could serve more clients. But if the, you know, I'm looking into the letters of authority process at the moment. And so if something like that then takes them forever, then yeah. I suppose it's what you said, like getting the basics right first.
Yeah. And that's that legacy issue again. I think, you know, if you're looking at letters of authority and if you're getting information on a plan that was taken out in 1982 and the information for that plan is in the provider's basement in a paper file, which just still happens, it's, you know, it is a fact. There's only so much you can do until you're going to get hindered by that. In 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever, all of those legacy plans will have gone, you know, people will have taken the benefits, retired, died, whatever it might be. So in the future, the slickness of the processes that people are trying to work on now, you won't have that hindrance, but it's such a long way off. You at the minute, you have to kind of get a balance between what you would do in an ideal world and what your reality is and what you have to work with.
Yeah, definitely. You've already touched on this as well, the advisor gap, and I did want to talk a little bit more about that and why you for example, when I went to school and uni, it wasn't even flagged up as a career. I've said this a lot, I've heard the same from a lot of people, you know, it's always doctor, lawyer, accountant, journalist, but never financial advisor. And I know it's the same experience for a lot of people, and I just wondered who you think that sort of the responsibility of getting the word out there more about advice falls with. Is it the advisors? Is it government? Is it the regulator? Is it everyone?
I think there's only people from within the industry that can genuinely promote it in an authentic way of it is genuinely a really good industry to work in. And I can tell you that because I work in it. Like, I always think that we operate in this bubble, and it's absolutely on everybody within the bubble to kind of get outside of it, either to help more people get advice and let them realize advice is, you know, for them as well when it is, and that it's not just for already rich people, but then also to get people to kind of come in and to choose it. And I think from a regulator or a government perspective, you're not going to get that kind of buy-in. You're not going to get the passion, the stuff that people love about the impact you have in financial services. It needs to go out, but I think it's absolutely, you know, it's like a drop in the ocean. I went to a university and I did a talk, and it was to a group of accountancy students. So the university went, oh, finance, that's probably the same. So put me as a paraplanner in front of accountancy students, which obviously wasn't the same. But At the time I had parasols, and I was like, I'm an outsourced paraplanner. This is what it means. I run my own business. This is the impact we have. This is why I love my job. If you have any questions afterwards, like, stay back and have a chat. And every single person that was in that room got up and just formed this really long queue. And So I was like, all right, okay, hang on. This is not very efficient. Like, what's kind of the questions? And it was, I chose accountancy because I'm good with maths and I'm good with numbers. And I thought that was my only option. But now you're telling me there's another option. But that's, you know, that was one class however many years ago. Like, how do you do that over and over and over? It's, in fact, we did one as well where we were in a careers book in one of the local colleges, I think it was. And it was like, choose that path. Like, here's what a paraplanner is. Here's what you can do in future. But yeah, unless we are getting more of the good stuff outside of our bubble, we're just so insulated from the world.
Mm, yeah, definitely. And I suppose, as you said, it could sort of double up and be getting the word out about people who might want to take advice as well.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly that. It's both aspects. And I think, you know, in the same way that people, if they ever do come across, like mine was the same as everybody, fell into advice, but because somebody I knew somebody who'd received an inheritance, and she'd received £100,000 inheritance, and they'd said, she's going to see an advisor to see what to do with it. And I thought, oh, well, what would they do? Why, what would they say? I don't have a clue. And it just felt like this kind of massive unknown. So even that, even if more people are getting advice, but then they're talking about it, and then maybe people go and look into it, and then maybe they see it as a career. But there's a lot of shouting out to do about it.
Definitely. What do you think about the advice guidance boundary stuff that the FCA's put out?
I can see what they're trying to do, and obviously they've tried similar initiatives before, and not that it was an FCA thing and not that it's directly the same, but it's like that robo advice piece. It's people just constantly trying to go, like, how do you kind of crunch the numbers to work better for maybe a different group of people. I think even before that, even in the group of people that are, you know, maybe have more complicated needs than would work under the advice guidance, there's still a massive gap there. There's almost like, you know, are you trying to fix too many problems at once? Like, if we're already here, do we try and get more of these in? Then do you kind of try and use the efficiency to break it down rather than the FCA stepping in? And I think well-intentioned input from the FCA sometimes has the opposite effect and sends people running and going, do you know what? I'm going to stay over here because I know what I'm doing. This works. I know I can do it compliantly. I know I can do a good job. Just going to stick with what I know. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how it's adapted or adopted by firms.
Mm, definitely. And then I suppose there's, it sort of feeds into the argument of maybe there's not enough financial education and whose responsibility that is. Like, so I don't know if that's really the responsibility of advisors to try and increase financial education in this country.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's something that we do on the foundation. So Hayley does a lot of it and going out. She has been working with the YMCA, and she'll kind of go out and do presentations and just try and get kind of some basic financial education. I think I'm not fully up to speed with it, but I believe that there is stuff starting to come in on the curriculum, because that, I think a career and a passion for finance, that's on us. I think basic financial education for the general public is absolutely, you know, government and education, and it should be filtered down. There is no reason, as far as I can see, why not? You know, there's kind of absolute basics in terms of like money management and budgeting and understanding like taxes, if not the ins and outs. There is absolutely fundamentals, pensions, retirement, whatever it might be, that you can give people at a young age, if only to get kind of the cogs whirring and thinking about it. There's that, kind of joke, isn't there, every January when it comes around, which is that they know about Pythagoras, but they have no idea how to do a self-assessment. Like, what?
Where's the priority? Really strange, yeah. I always did think it was quite strange. My parents were always quite good at educating me on finance. Not that I've necessarily carried out, but I did know at least.
Tried.
I just thought it was quite weird that, yeah, that there was no education in schools about it.
Yeah.
When I'm in school,
you wouldn't have, it's not, I appreciate, obviously, you're not going to go into the nitty gritty of it. You're not going to go into stuff that is going to be time sensitive, so it could change the year after. Like, you kind of, it's a bit like advice, you know, it'd be guidance, not advice, that we're going to draw a line on it. But I think the absolute basics in getting people thinking about money. But then somebody told me that kind of your money habits are apparently formed by the time you're seven anyway. So it's kind of what you have almost learned as an experience from your parents, the way that they treat money, the way that they interact with you and money, forms a lot of people's habits around whether they're a natural saver or a spender. But yeah, I think, I know, scary, isn't it?
Seven, that's
explains a lot. But if you... you might have those as kind of a natural habit, you know, based on, as I say, like what you've witnessed and what you can kind of see. If alongside that, from say age 11, you're then learning more, less emotional money habits and more practical money habits, and it might, you know, that's probably your opportunity to start to kind of counter them out and level it out a little bit. So I definitely think there should be, it's got to be, ideally a school thing. It, you know, it comes in on the curriculum, you get your absolute basics. As part of that, you might find it interesting enough that then you go, is there a career option? Then you see that there's careers, and, you know, or at the very least you go, I'm going to start taking better care of my finances, I'm going to know that there's an entire industry out there that I can kind of go to as and when I need to. And then on the other side of it, if people in finance are saying, yes, come over here, we're really nice, come and work with us, between the two, you'd like to think it'd kind of help shift some of those challenges.
Yeah, definitely. And on the again, going back to careers and financial advice, it's a bit of a tenuous link, but I did also want to talk a bit about diversity in the advice profession, because I know that it's still, well, from what I've seen, it's not like we're not there yet. It's still very white male heavy sector, and maybe that, even if you know, people know that there could be a career in advice, maybe that puts off some younger people, women, people from ethnic minorities, things like that. I just wondered if what are your views on that?
I think we've talked a lot about it improving, and maybe it has, but a tiny bit. I was at an event 2 weeks ago, and there was one other lady, I was speaking, all the other speakers were male. There was one lady delegate, everybody else was male. As you said, I think everybody else was middle-aged white male, or maybe there was a couple slightly younger than middle-aged. And I made a comment on it afterwards, like, when we'd finished, we kind of went for like some food and drinks, and the lady had left. So then it was just me and men. And I made a comment and went, oh, this is nice and diverse. and, you know, there were like, there was, you don't want it to come across, it's not being, what's the word, like offensive or denigrating to the people that are there, because actually that was a really nice company, and it's a company that's trying to do a lot in finance and trying to be really progressive with tech and innovating and so on. It was just, you know, that's who kind of came along and that's who was at that event. But it just goes to show it absolutely is far, far, far from what would be ideal, because of the fact that we're giving advice to a wide range of people. If we were only ever giving advice to men, and maybe historically that was more the case, then fine, you can kind of almost see like how that would parry up, but we're not. We know that kind of the demographic of people seeking advice is changing. We know that they're getting younger. We know more women are seeking advice. So both sides of it, as you say, A, to come in as a career, like, who are you seeing? Are you just seeing men in suits talking on a stage and nothing's resonating with you? Are you thinking of going and getting advice and you're just seeing men in suits and it's not resonating with you? So I think it damages us from both aspects. And I talked about this on Radar Evolution Conference back in September. And I talked about, in the run-up to that, a few people had told me things that had happened at conferences, at finance conferences, where they were made to feel very uncomfortable, a few women, by men in the room. And it made me realise that I've, because of the role that I'm in now and because I run a company, I'm kind of, I'm almost elevated away from it and I don't see the bad stuff that happens. And I kind of thought like maybe we'd progressed further and there are more women and there is less bad behaviour. And actually what I was hearing is that's not the case. Like I'm just not experiencing it. Like somebody, you know, a lady trying to find a seat in a busy conference and a guy saying, oh, come and sit here on my lap. And I mean, isn't it? Like, and so imagine if you're 20 odd year old and it's your first conference that you've gone to and that's how you kind of treat, you're just not going to go back. So then, you know, maybe you start to see a few more women or younger people or different demographics coming into conferences, then maybe you see the numbers dropping back off because, and you know, it's the minority, but the minority can still have a massive impact. So there's an awfully long way to go, and it's made harder by the fact that that stuff is kind of, it bubbles away under the surface and you don't realize it. And you know, it's not easy to call out, even if you're there and you witness it. It's a really difficult position to be in. Get some really cross.
Yeah, no, it's horrendous.
It's awful.
And just one little thing happening like that at a conference can massively taint conferences for someone then, I imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you wouldn't want to go back. And I mean, I've heard it from women who are not kind of, you know, young and wide-eyed, like they've been in the industry a long time. And even then, like they'll get, there'll be behaviour that they're very uncomfortable with. But again, you're in a room and you're with your peers and you don't want to make a big fuss. And you know, it's not just in finance, it happens absolutely everywhere. It's like, it's part of, sadly, it's been part of being female. But actually, yeah, if it's in within this bubble and we're trying to change it, then I think we need to be highlighting that it does happen, and we need to take the opportunity to stop it if we see it or witness it or hear of it.
Yeah, definitely. Totally agree. So I just, when you were talking about demographics, it just got me thinking about a cover feature that I wrote for February. So I was looking at how like the new generation of clients maybe takes advice differently from previous generations. And I started off talking about Gen Alpha, who are obviously just sort of teens at the moment, or eldest, I think, are 12 or 13. So they're probably not quite ready for advice yet, although in 10 years they might be. So it might be worth sort of considering them. But obviously it's, I get so confused with the generations. Gen Z is the one after millennials.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're sort of, I think people still maybe think of them as being quite young, like teens themselves, and actually the oldest are in their mid-20s now, so they're maybe starting to plan for their future. Some of them might be taking advice, others might just not know. There's not really a question in there. I was just started rambling about
pondering on it.
No, I just wondered, like, if you have any thoughts on the next generations and how, I suppose, how advisors need to be adapting to serve them.
I think it's really interesting. So I made the mistake of assuming, you know, kind of your older generations are used to a very sort of tactile, hands-on, face-to-face relationship, and your younger ones are just going to want to get it all through an app, and like maybe there's a sliding scale in between. And then I went to a talk with a lady who her entire job is that, and it's demographics and generations and how it plays out, and she was talking about it in the context of finance, and then was actually quoting from, I know all stats are made up, so I'm not even going to try and guess exactly what they were, but basically this data that was showing, and then actually it was like your older, you know, what were your baby boomers? They're actually really enjoying getting stuck into online and kind of doing something different, and they're really engaged with it. And then your younger ones are actually, they've grown up online. They're a bit sick of it. And actually an opportunity to have a face-to-face personal relationship it's unique to them. That's, you know, that's quite an experience in and of itself. Like, yeah, I can do it on my app, but can I sit down and talk to somebody and have that experience? So I think it's a really interesting one to see how it plays out. I think all you can do as an advice firm is have a flexible setup that's going to cater for the way that people work, irrespective of their demographic, irrespective of like their generation or their age group. Do you have somebody who enjoys the time sitting down in a cup of tea, and you're going to print out their report and you're going to talk it through, and that's them, great. If you have somebody who, either because they're 20 or because they're a super busy CEO or because they're 80-year-old and they're living the best life on the Cayman Islands and they just want to do it all online and they want to do it all on an app, like, they're all very different circumstances, but might be a reason for them kind of doing it. So I think from an advice perspective, if you've got an infrastructure that's going to support that range, and then, yeah, maybe go into really open-minded as to how people are, irrespective of their demographic, because it's just all up in the air, isn't it? And it changes so quick. Like, they're already talking about Generation AA being after Alpha, and I just can't.
That's really interesting about the different generations, and I would definitely be guilty of generalizing and assuming that baby boomers would want to have their face-to-face meetings as well.
Yeah. You know, they're busy now. They've got beaches to walk on in slow motion.
True. Cool. I think probably we're coming to the end. I think we're probably running out of time. But I did just have one more question, if you don't mind. And that is there one piece of advice that you give to someone looking to get into financial advice, financial planning, or financial services more generally?
From a career perspective?
Yeah.
I would say to maybe just find a couple of advisors online that sort of resonate with you, that you think, if you were looking for advice, that's who I would speak to, and then just speak to them, but from a career perspective, and ask them why they love their job. And I think once you speak to a really passionate advisor, that's it. You'll want to get in. There are ways in. There's lots of different academies. Like, the Verve Foundation runs schemes. Like, I think people, the first part is getting people to want to come in, to understand why they would and what the opportunities are. The second part then is them saying, are there any open doors? And there absolutely are. And like I say, if nothing else, come to the Verve Foundation. There's either our programme or we can point you to places, because the last thing we want is people to be interested in finance and then not be able to find their way in. But if you're not yet sure, I would speak to a couple of advisors, ask them why they love their job, and then I'll probably help you make your mind up.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for joining me, Cathy. It's been really good to talk to you today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to In Conversation With. We do hope that you enjoyed it. Please do keep up to date with all our new releases via Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your podcasts from. You can also keep up to date with all our new content published on the Money Marketing website, as well as our print edition Money Marketing magazine. So make sure to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. See you next time.